And this is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Igor in Budapest, Hungary, just texted in and said, Dory, that was one of the most beautiful and haunting hour number two echoes I have heard in years. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Igor. Appreciate hearing from our Hungarian listener, big Hungarian listener base for the big show. So appreciate that. All right. Welcome to Fast 15, a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. And so, Nicole, as a compromise, are we going to just play a little bit of this thing at 2:30? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, I made a special version.
Special version.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it gets all the good stuff from your story, maybe gets through some of the other stuff.
It was all good. I crafted it very carefully.
It's all good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, whatever. All right. In the Fast 15 here, Jay Leno has done his first interview since being badly injured in a fire. He was working on one of his cars when gasoline splashed up on him, and he had severe burns to his face, his hands, his arms. There have been pictures of him since then, and you can see that his face is impacted by the burns, and in the first pictures, his hands and arms, they were in real rough shape, too. But Jay Leno, very different from David Letterman. They were rivals. They were friends when they were early, both coming up as young comedians. Leno was one of Letterman's favorite guests when Letterman had his 12:30 show. Then they competed to get the Tonight Show and became bitter enemies. Rivals, they were head-to-head with each other. And once Letterman quit, he has pretty much disappeared. He still has a Netflix show that's awful, by the way. But he still has a Netflix show. But Letterman, for the most part, has disappeared from the limelight, just like his idol, Johnny Carson. Johnny Carson, once he quit The Tonight Show, he never made another public appearance. Well, one exception. He went on Letterman's show one time, but he wouldn't say anything. He just came out, he set up a cardboard phony desk, and then he just shook his head and walked off the stage. Didn't say anything. So that's the way Letterman wants to be. Leno's very different. Leno is still doing stand-up. He's doing stand-up in Vegas. He goes to tribal casinos. He's got his car show on, well, I don't know what network that is, CNBC or one of them, Jay Leno Garage. But he still loves the limelight. But yes, Jay Leno, for the first time, has talked in an interview about this fire that so badly disfigured him. And he said it got him a call from the president.
I love the story about how when your doctor was first meeting you, you were in the middle of listening to a voicemail, and it was like, hey, this is Joe from Indonesia. And then your doctor was like, and then I put together who it was.
Oh, yeah. That was the President Biden call. That was very nice. That was, I suggest you have more important things to do, but I thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate it.
And he told the Today Show what happened.
It was a 1907 white steam car. So the fuel line was clogged. So I was underneath it trying to clog. And I said, blow some air through the line. Let's see if we can clear. And then a line, and then poof, and suddenly, boom, I got a face full of gas. And then the pilot light jumped and my face caught on fire. And I said to my friend, I said, Dave, I'm on fire. And Dave, okay. I said, no, Dave, I'm on fire.
And his buddy Dave was there and had to put the fire out on his face.
I couldn't even see his face. He downplays it all, but I'm telling you, he was really engulfed. I couldn't see his face.
It was on fire?
It was a wall of fire.
What was the first thing you did when you saw him engulfed in flames?
I just grabbed him. He was just under the car. I grabbed him by the head, and I pulled his head into my chest.
I thought it was a bad Tinder date. I go, what's going on here?
What are you doing? Let Dave talk about how he saved you. Okay, so you kind of brought him into your chest.
I did.
Yeah.
Started to smother the fire. Yeah. Then I put the car out.
Yeah.
And I told Jay, go into the bathroom. you know, put cold water on your
cold
face.
Water.
That's when I put the car out, put the fire out. Went into the bathroom to look at Jay, and
what'd
I said,
"What'd you think?"
Oh, it was. Like I say, he downplays that, but it was horrific. It was a scary thing. It doesn't take a genius to figure out. Call 911.
Right? Yeah,
and that's what I did.
But Leto wanted somebody else with him before he would go to the hospital.
I drove home right after that.
Wait, you drove yourself home? Why did you decide to go home and stay home for that night?
Well, because my wife doesn't drive anymore, and I didn't want her stuck and not knowing what was going on. It just seemed like the right thing to do, and I think it was.
So you loved your wife more than you worried about yourself?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
was that it?
Man. Do you remember, Nicole, it had to be 3, 4, 5 years ago. There was a guy down on, I think it was on Leary Avenue in Ballard, and somebody went up to him, and I don't remember if he threw gasoline on him or what the flammable liquid was, but then he set the guy on fire. Do you remember we got that victim on the show?
Yeah, I do remember a little bit about
that. Oh, my goodness, because it was just so horrifying.
It is.
Because he was fully engulfed, and he had burns on, I want to say, 80% of his body, which is hard to survive even. But I remember asking him, you know, I hope to goodness none of us listening will ever experience what that's like, but can you describe it? And when he started describing being fully immolated like that, it was just, it was horrifying, the thought of a way to go imaginable. And, you know, you think about those people on 9/11. I don't want to get too gory here or gruesome, but you think about those people on 9/11 who chose to jump out a window on the 104th floor of the World Trade Center because the alternative of the heat and the flames that were bearing in on them was even more horrible. And so you jump out a window to certain death. It's that just sounds like an absolutely horrific thing to go through, and way to go. Man.
I think his friend is a good friend and also thinks well under pressure like that, because I mean, he took his head and pulled it into his body. I mean, you'd think you'd find something to smother it with. I get that, but into his own body, you don't know if it's going to catch your clothes on fire.
I thought,
right?
The same, because I think my first reaction, I hope I'm never in that situation, I think my first reaction would be to whip off my shirt and put my shirt over my friend's burning face. But I think that I would think a little bit about self-preservation and not want to pull this ball of flame into my chest. But yeah, he sounds like a good buddy too.
Yeah.
So.
And then and then not wanting his wife to worry. So going home, picking her up and, you know, trying to man his way through the burn pain. Good grief.
Yep. All right. Well, cool guy, glad he's on the way. And he's already back doing stand-up, already performing again. All right. Up next in the Fastest 15, we talked about this in a different dictionary yesterday, but dictionary.com has announced that the word of the year for 2022 is woman. And that's because, of course, the radical left is trying desperately to change the definition of woman, so much so that they want to deny that women even exist. And now the Oxford, what was the dictionary we had yesterday? I don't remember which one. But they said a woman is someone, maybe born male at birth, who now identifies as a woman. And they said, and they identify. They can't even use she in the dictionary definition. And in this new dictionary.com that just came out today, they have decided that defying reality is the way to go. If you want to get the cool kids on your side, you have to just defy reality. So they have said that woman is their word of the year. It's interesting. When they all wanted to hail our first woman, black Supreme Court justice, and then when she gets asked, how do you define woman? Everybody's talking about you being the first woman. I'm not a biologist. So I guess we'll have to go to the dictionary now to get the definition of woman. But we're seeing, you know, the party of science is the party that is absolutely defying science at every single turn so that they can just completely redefine human life. And, man, you got to be strong. You control language, you control minds, and I don't want my mind controlled by them. Up next in the Fastest 15, I'm fascinated by this topic. More young adults than ever are back home living with their parents. They say that it's fueling a luxury boom. I'll get back to that in a minute because I think that's annoying. But this is from Bloomberg. They say a record number of young adults are now living with their parents. And this is really a surprising percentage. 50% of all young adults ages 18 to 29 are living with their parents right now. That is the highest level since right after the Great Depression in 1940. We were on the brink of World War II. We were coming out of the Great Depression. And that was the last time we had so many young adults living with their parents. And I would love to hear if you are in that demo, 18 to 29, and you are back living with your parents. I would love to hear how that's going for you. Text us at 888-973-CHIRO, 888-973-5476. You have friends in that demo. My daughters, all of their friends, or almost all of their friends, are in that demo. Nicole, are you still seeing this a lot among the younger people you know?
Yeah, I guess so. But I think that there's two types of kids in this position or young adults in this position. And some of them are using it productively. And those are parents that are, you know, okay, you can live here if you're doing this, this, and this to get to this place, right? But then there's also the kind that are not using it. They're just, you know, using it as an excuse to be lazy, right? And so I'm curious to hear from people as well which group you fall in, because I know a few of each. Some that are, you know, you're going to school now. Like, I get it, you're going to college and stuff, and most people, you know, that goes into debt, and so instead you just live at home. But then you're missing out on this, like, social experience that I think is beneficial to learning life skills, right? So I think there's pros and cons for yeah. it, and there's different groups that you can fall into. And now there's so much online school, especially since COVID. I know quite a few that graduated during the COVID time frame and are living at home just doing online school, being kind of lazy. And then I know
here's my view on this. So we converted our basement, our rec room, into a mother-in-law apartment, put in a, you know, nice kitchen, and it's it's a full mother-in-law apartment. Mm-hmm. And so during COVID, my daughter and son-in-law, they both got furloughed temporarily. It turned out to be very temporary, but they were both furloughed, and they came and lived in the apartment we have, which I love. I just love being around our kids. But the deal that we had was, okay, you got to pay us rent. You're not going to live for free. You're still going to have to pay us rent. And, you know, it's like, you know, a smaller, much smaller amount than what it would be worth. And you have to take any money you have and put it into investments for the long term, because I've always tried to encourage that in our kids. And then my wife and I, we took the rent money and we put it aside, and then when our kids went to buy a house, we were able to help them out by giving them back the money they had paid us in rent. And so I think as high as real estate prices are around here, it's almost impossible for, you know, 20 and 30 somethings to find a house. When, you know, it's still very, very expensive housing around here. And so that worked out great because we were able to help add to their down payment. Here's what's annoying about this Bloomberg story. They said, as a result of this trend, that the luxury sales market in the United States is at an all-time record high. Cartier, Tiffany, Bulgari watches, that more young people are living home to save money as rental costs increase, but they are using that savings and they are buying more high-end products than ever before. According to Morgan Stanley, they said that China used to be the biggest market ever for high-end watchmakers. But the United States has now overcome China for really super ultra-expensive watches. And it's mostly young people who aren't paying rent because they're living with their parents. And that, I think it's very misguided for parents to allow that. If your kids are there, have them pay you rent, even if you don't need it. And then put the money aside and help them buy a house with it. But if they're not paying you rent and they're buying $4,000 watches, you are not doing your kids any favors with that. So that's the disturbing part of this trend in this Bloomberg story. All right. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. We're going to check the news for you, and then Brock Huard is going to drop by for his weekly visit. Let's see what direction that goes. That's coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.
Here's Dory Monson with Brock Huard, brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy.
All right, it's Wednesday afternoon, and that's when our friend Brock Huard drops by for his weekly visit in the wake of controversy. Good afternoon, sir.
Well, it was a unique one this morning. Yes, it was a one of those awkward moments in radio. You've had them in your career. I don't think we've had a lot of them. I guess Jim Mora ripping me. I don't know if you remember that years ago,
fun.
But that wasn't live radio. That was a live press conference where he just totally, you know, verbally assaulted me, but I wasn't there. This was
stuff like that I find to be fun.
I know you enjoy it. You get chuckles out of it. I'm not the biggest confrontation guy, but as you know, every Wednesday we have KJ Wright, the former Seahawks star linebacker, on our morning show, and he has been so gracious, so transparent. He's really good at radio.
He's a good man.
And I don't just say that. Like, I don't throw around compliments. A lot of people do, oh, that was the greatest interview. Oh, that's a great guy. Oh, wah, 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 wah. I don't really do that. But KJ is very talented. KJ knows and knows that I think he's good, but he's humble about it. He's gracious. And so, anywho, this is the third time that he has brought on a former teammate during our hour together. Brandon Mebane came on, Malcolm Smith, Super Bowl MVP. And today, Richard Sherman came on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, you know, Richard, who's opinionated, loud, had a little beef with my co-host, Salk, so much so that he unfollowed him on Twitter. And so we were a little surprised that he would come on the show. And yeah, about 7-8 minutes in, Richard decided that, he was not going to talk to Salk. So it was just a wee bit awkward.
Okay, and here's what that sounded like.
Well, first off, I remember when I exited here, and I remember some words from you.
Yeah.
That were a lot different than I had heard when I was here. So, you know what I mean? It's a little different. I'm going to answer the questions from Brock and KJ, but we're going to excuse you out of this.
First of all, that's just not true. I mean, like, the words you heard from me were actually pretty similar to what you had heard while you were here. You just maybe didn't hear them.
Yeah, because I don't listen to your show. But
again, that's fine. I'm not asking you to listen, but the words didn't change. I didn't say anything different when you left from when you were here.
You're excused from the interview.
All right.
Well, sorry.
Don't really work that way, Sherm. This is, you know, a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Okay. All right. I understand how Richard Sherman feels.
Well, you think it's funny? I mean, you think it's funny? You think it's the same kind of funny, right?
Because
the same kind of funny as Jim Mora calling me a clown that doesn't know anything about football?
Yeah, I enjoy stuff like that because I've had politicians who've gone off on me in public, in very public ways, and have called me out in public. And I don't care about other people's opinions. And so I like the fact that whatever I've carved out here, whatever you guys have carved out there, whatever we carve out is important enough to people to have a strong reaction to it, because that's what we're supposed to do. Now, I don't think we should intentionally antagonize, but yep. I think that eliciting strong reactions from people, that's a good thing.
Yeah, and you've got to let people in this business have their opinion. And for Richard, he's got beef with a lot of people. And it started day one with Richard. I mean, that's how he went about it. I mean, he was personal. Remember with Tom Brady, "You mad, bro?" like in his face. With Skip Bayless saying, I'm a better human than you. You're a cretin. Right. I'm better than you. Darrell Revis, you know, the top corner in the game at that time, like, you know, told him this, like, I'm better than you. I'm better at life than you. I'm better corner. I mean, that was the way, you know, Richard has gone about it, making it very personal.
Was it Richard Sherman who told Jim Moore he was going to have his credential taken away?
Yeah, that was. That was that guy. Well, it was, but in Richard's mind, he never said it. Like, he thought it was fake news. Like, well, did he ever hear the tape of it when he went on national, you know, television and literally said that on national television? Well, I mean, is there really tape of me saying it, or are people just, you know, saying it? No, Richard, there's audio of it, and we have it. And we have audio of you saying that to Jim Moore, that I'm going to get you fired, and I'm going to get your credential pulled, and I'm going to ruin your life. Yeah, I mean, that is Richard. And so, yep, he decided today to play a similar card.
Well, and look, if it's not contrived, then I think it's just interesting, because ultimately radio is the most authentic of mediums. Yes. You know, I saw a clip a day or two ago of, I don't even know what network they're on, because I never watch it, but it's Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay, yeah. And they're just screaming at each other, and it seems so contrived. And to me, that is the least interesting broadcasting imaginable. If people are just doing it for the sake of, you know, some cheap community theater effect. Yep. But if you're truly passionate about something, and I am about the things that I talk about, and if somebody has a strong reaction, you know, agreeing's wonderful, but if they have a strong disagreement, well, that's wonderful too, because I think that also leads to fascinating conversations. So, so as long as it's sincere, and one of the beefs, I don't think you do this, one of the beefs that I have in talk radio in general, and I think it happens a lot in sports radio, is the fake laughter in every show. And there are even, you know, morning show boot camps where they teach you to have your board up, or to have somebody who's the constant hyena laughter. Yeah. You know, man. It's awful. It's unlistenable stuff. So that, to me, I'd rather hear sincere anger in somebody than contrived laughter in someone.
How about confrontation? How about we broaden this beyond your show and my show? Mm-hmm. Because it's going to happen, Dory. Some of your listeners right now, over the next 2 weeks, as they get together for Christmas and New Year's, and they get around family, inevitably, Grandpa's going to say something inappropriate. Maybe an uncle's going to say something really stupid. Maybe a family member is going to, you know, create a situation at the dinner table, like, oh, I really wish we wouldn't go there, and just have that same awkward, like, oh, confrontation. You good at those moments?
I don't have those moments, because I completely compartmentalize this part of my life, the radio, the broadcaster, the opinion guy. When I'm sitting down with my family, I don't talk about any of the issues that I talk about on the radio, because you'd burn out if you do that, especially if you brought the same sort of emotion and intensity and sincerity to every one of those topics. So I would much rather talk to my family members about what's going on in their life and hope that they would respect the same way, because I'm just not a very confrontational person off the air. Now, I think you like having, and you're a good facilitator, whether it's with family or friends or a group of strangers, you like coming up with provocative questions. You're really good at this.
Whoa. Provocative or just deep?
Both.
No, provocative means there's an agenda. I don't like provocative. I try not to have an agenda, but I definitely think of like
provocative
deeper.
as not just provoking anger. I think of it as provoking thought, provoking insight.
Okay, all right.
I really don't say that word with anything attached to it.
Okay, all right. That's fair. Okay.
Wait, yeah. Are we having a sincere argument now?
We are right
making
now.
That up.
We are right now.
I'm lost in our own reality. Stop it. Back it up. Back it up.
Right. Sorry.
But you like doing that. You like
I do.
Making people to think about things that they otherwise might be uncomfortable talking about.
I hate surface. I have tremendous disdain for just surfacey. Everything's okay. No, it's not. No, if we're living life and we're living a relationship with people and we're digging into life together, there's messy stuff. And now that doesn't mean like politics or, you know, kind of what you were mentioning earlier. Am I going to sit there and try to stir stuff up? But as a left-handed, sensitive, overly sensitive middle child, I think that is something that just comes in my upbringing that, you know, you just come in the middle of everything. And I do like, yes, I do like to provoke deeper thought and yes. deeper conversation. There's no question.
Yeah. And, you know, you and I had talked off air a couple days before Thanksgiving, and I used your idea for our Thanksgiving prayer, which was wonderful. And because I do think you're very good at that. And it was instead of saying what you're thankful for, we picked two people at the table who are three to your left and six to your left, and you're going to tell us what you are thankful about them.
Ooh.
And that was your idea. It worked fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I'm always looking for ways to facilitate better as a father and as a leader of a family. But I don't want the rest of my life to be the same as the 3 hours from noon to three every day, because I'd go insane.
Yeah,
and then one other quick thing on that.
Yeah.
Because, okay, whether it's Jim Mora with you or, you know, when you were getting criticized, when you started your broadcasting career, there was one national website that loved taking shots at you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't care in the slightest about critiques or criticism, because I am so comfortable with who I am and how I live my life that any critic tells me everything about them and nothing about me. But you have to evolve to have that. And there are some people who never do. There are a lot of people in our business who are super thin-skinned, even after long runs in the biz. I know very early on, it bothered you a little bit when people would take shots at you.
Oh, sure. But now, to your point, you have to learn to live and endure that. And, you know, we've made a whole segment of it called Mean Tweets that I genuinely now kind of enjoy hearing some of that. And the more creative, the better, right? So, and you just realize that if you're doing this job and you're a commentator on television or you have a morning radio show, you are going to have critics. You're going to have folks that just don't care for you, don't like your style, don't like your faith, don't like your politics, don't like any of it. And yeah, I think just kind of getting to a level ground where A, you have, as you said, such a belief and a conviction yourself, and then B, you're not going to overwhelm or change them. So you better learn to live with them, and you better learn to, you know, handle them and be able to react to them. And even that moment today, you know, with Richard this morning, to be able to, you know, kind of stand up and say, hey, you know, you can do what you want to do, but I'm going to protect my partner here. And just like you protected your brotherhood as players, and that's the way you went about it. And, you know, to live through those experiences and to grow and to keep growing through those experiences too.
Look, you don't like surface conversations.
No,
look how deep we dove just now.
Yep.
There you go. All right, Brock Huard, you can hear him every morning on 710 Seattle Sport. And, man, I'm not going to be here next week. So, merry, merry Christmas to you and your family. Let's be in touch.
You as well. Let's be in touch off the air a little bit more. You know, let's do that a little more. I know we're not to resolutions time, but we got to do a better job of that.
You got it.
We haven't done that well enough.
I'm only a phone call away.
Okay. That sounds great. Thanks,
Brock. All right. God bless you and your family this Christmas season, Brock. All right, that's
rolls on.
All right, there's Brock Huard. Lots more to come with the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on.
This was interesting to me. So last week and early this week, we were talking about this unfathomable trade that the Biden administration made with the Russians. Gave up international arms dealer responsible for the deaths of untold numbers of people across the country, including many tribal children in Africa, where he was arming warring factions with guns and weaponry to kill their enemies. The merchant of death, Victor Boot, who'd been in custody. And we have a Marine, Paul Whelan, who's unjustly sitting in a Russian prison with a phony espionage charge on him. But they didn't make that trade. They traded for Brittany Griner. And why? Because Congress was about to pass the Defense of Marriage Act, which is a piece of legislation that protects something that has been protected for a long time in America. It was completely all for show. But it was they wanted to have Brittany Griner and her wife speaking in America as they unveiled this Defense of Marriage Act. So they made a trade and sent one of the world's most dangerous terrorists and arms dealers back to the Russians so he can arm the Russians to go kill Ukrainians while we give Ukraine $91 billion saying that they have to fight off Russia, but then we provide Russia with an arms dealer. It's insane. But as I was talking about this, I was saying what a bad trade it was, I started getting all these text messages, and I must have gotten 10 or 15 of them, saying, yeah, but Dory, you don't mention that Victor Boot only had 7 more years in prison, and then he was going to get out in 7 years anyway. And I was thinking, why would that matter? That's 7 more years that the world would be protected from this guy. But I was really wondering, why is everybody saying the exact same thing? And then I heard John Kirby, Defense Department spokesman, trying to defend this. And I'll be darned if he didn't say the exact same thing.
It's a couple of points. Mr. Boot wasn't serving a life sentence, Shannon. He was going to get out in 2029. So at some point in the not too distant future, he would have been a free man. It is 6 years earlier. Nobody over at the White House is doing backflips of joy that he is walking the streets. But this was the deal we could get. Now was the moment we could get it. We're obviously going to look after our national security.
How does that happen? That the administration says, okay, but we're going to say, but he would have been out in 7 years anyway. And then everybody who's ideologically with them just repeats it, just parrots it. Because it's a stupid, that's one of the stupidest arguments I've heard. So for 7 more years, the planet would have been protected from an evil terrorist supplying arms dealer. And since the administration said, okay, this is what we're going to say about it, then I start getting texts from all these people saying the exact same thing. Everybody's just working off the same talking point. But freedom of thought and independent thought, it's not just frowned upon. It's being criminalized in some cases. You're not allowed to think for yourself. But don't just repeat what other people say. Form your own thought, please. It's much more interesting that way. Okay, we're going to check the news for you here at the top of the hour. Jay Inslee, he hosted an equity summit. Wait until you hear the things that they say are attached only to white people. This is as insulting and racist to people of color as anything I've ever heard. And I'll play you some audio next here on the Dory Monson Show.